Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part one of episode number 123, and the first episode of the new year of 2021 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. First of all, I'd like to welcome all of you to part one of episode number 123 and the first new episode of the brand new year 2021 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or on iHeartRadio, or on Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is, I'm just going to give you a script description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 25-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a 60 Music fan slash expert slash nerd, and each week of this podcast, I take one song by one artist in the 60s and put the show in two parts. First part, I start talking about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, and do my own personality on the arrangement of the song, which will include the chords, melody, and lyrics, and the second part of the show, dig deep into the history behind that track. In that part of the show, talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, who are the musicians on the track, whether it be the session musicians, the members themselves, the engineer who recorded it, the producer, the songwriter, the producer, and all the history behind all those people who were involved in the song, and name the studio the song was recorded at, where that studio was located at, and the peak position of the song made it originally in the Billboard Hot 100 charts when it first came out, and the year when the song was released, the label song was released on, the history behind that record label, the song was released on, all that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on this week's episode of the podcast, first of all, Happy New Year, guys. It's 2021, and, you know, I feel a little bit more optimistic about this upcoming year than I did last year, and obviously, we know what happened in 2020, and even though it kind of feels like we might be in for another dose of that in 2021, I feel like some new things that have happened recently, you know, some newer developments into fighting against COVID, like the vaccines that just came out. I'm hoping that those things will kind of spearhead, you know, COVID and the virus and everything. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, once we kind of get those things rolling with our new president in America and everything, that once we kind of get those to the hands of people like us, I know it's going to be a while before that happens, but I feel like, you know, 2021 just might be better than 2020. We'll see. I mean, it's too early to tell right now since it's literally the first week of the new year. But I'm hoping that, you know, 2021 will definitely be better than 2020. And in fact, I came up with a cool little catchphrase that way you guys know what I'm talking about. But basically it goes, hashtag, we'll have more fun in 2021. Hashtag 2021 is going to be the one. And I'm sort of sticking by that, you know, for this, for this new year. But I mean, I'm really thinking that 2021 will be different, even if it's not going to be happen like this week. Even if it's going to be at least until the summertime before 2021 really kicks in, I'm thinking that things will kind of go back towards the way they were eventually. But anyways, as I was saying, it's a new year. And, you know, just one more announcement, one more final reminder. I am releasing a single on January 8th, and that's this Friday. I'm very, very excited for that. I do have a pre-save link set up for Spotify for, I do finally have that set up through DistroKid, my distributor that I'm using, for the single. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to link that to the description of this week's episode of the podcast. And like I said, if, you know, I'll link that to some of the previous episodes where I announced the single release. But like I said before, it's a two-song single, in Turquoise Apricot on the A side, She Said No on the B side, and plus it's going to be under my new stage name, Sam Capital L dot Williams. I'm very excited for that. But yeah, so that's going to be really cool. And I'm really kind of looking forward for you guys to hear my music, because if you love all the stuff I talk about in my podcast, you'll definitely like my music because it's right in that wheelhouse of 60s. You know, in general, I mean, I cover various different aspects of 60s music, everything from psychedelic rock to pop rock, kind of British invasion style pop rock, to, you know, soul music, 60s kind of soul, you know, and sort of just general 60s pop in general. You know, the influences on the songs off of this EP are unbelievable. They range from various different, stuff that I've talked about on this show before, and A lot of really interesting lyrics too, because some of my stuff, if you listen to lyrics of it, it might seem a little controversial. I mean, you might be on the fence with some of what these songs are kind of about lyrically, but every piece of lyric I write, you know, with most of these songs off of the EP, pretty much all of them have good intentions behind them, and I don't mean to do anybody any harm, but that's just kind of how I like to write. Sometimes I kind of like to push the envelope a little bit when it comes to writing my lyrics and write things from kind of a different perspective from most other people. So I'm very excited for you guys to hear these songs. Some of them are very, very personal to me, so you're going to get a good insight on some things that happened to me in the past and how I feel about certain things when it comes to relationships. You know, so you're going to get a good insight into me. You're going to really get to know me as a person. You know, I mean, I know you guys kind of do that already with my podcast, but this is definitely a different side of myself that I'm really excited for you guys to see and access for the first time in quite a long time. You know, so I'm very excited. And again, January 8th, Turquoise Apricot on the A side, Chisa No on the B side. I'm very excited. And yeah, so, and just a quick FYI about this podcast. These upcoming weeks, I'm going to be doing something. I'm going to go into a new genre of music that I haven't covered yet from the 60s. I know I've done so much. And it's going to be something kind of interesting, kind of different. You know, I'm going to be talking about something I have talked about before on my podcast, but it's going to be kind of a back-to-back thing, because normally what I do is that for each week I do something completely different. I do a part one and part two, and then I move on to something completely different the next week. But that's not going to be like that, because I'm going to basically dedicate 4 weeks into doing two sets of parts one and part twos, and they're going to be two sets of that, but they're all going to be about the same genre of music from the 60s. But the only difference is that, and this is actually something really cool that I'm going to give you guys a pretty good heads up on. So I'm going to do two sets of part ones and part twos. The first set is going to be about the actual genre of music from the 60s. I'm going to do a real example of a song from that specific genre. And then I'm going to do the modern day version of that genre. And what I mean by that is that I've mentioned this before in my podcast. I found out about Zooey Deschanel's music over Thanksgiving of last year, and I fell in love with it. So basically, I'm going to do one of her songs next week. And again, spoiler alert, you know, I'm telling you guys what's going to happen. But I thought about this long and hard over the break. I took 2 weeks off for my podcast the week of Christmas and New Year's, and I'm going to start fresh in the new year in 2021. But I thought about this long and hard. I decided, you know what? I think it's time for me to really tackle this specific genre of music, because I haven't done it yet. I think it needs to be done. So basically what's going to happen is that I'm going to do the 60s version of this genre of music, and then I'm gonna do the modern day version of it. So I'm not going to be totally switching gears and doing something completely different after the first set of part one and twos. I'm not going to be doing something completely different the next week after that, but I will be doing the updated version of this, the more modern sort of take on this very specific genre of music from the 60s, which was actually pretty cool. There's actually a lot of really good songs in this genre. But anyway, so that's basically what's going to happen, and let's get started in this week's song. Moving on, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? Okay, so what that specific genre of music, if I was kind of hinting it to you guys, that I'm going to be covering for these next 4 weeks on my podcast, is a genre of music from the 60s known as girl group pop. And this song I'm about to analyze for you guys and break down for you guys and also talk about the music and the lyrics for is a classic song within this genre. And, you know, girl group pop is kind of a genre of music from the 60s that was very much there and very much prevalent. But it's funny because, you know, we don't really hear too much about it today. I mean, of course, there's Motown with the Supremes, and a lot of people know about that specifically. And, you know, there are certain things like a lot of people know Be My Baby, and a lot of people know a lot of, you know, so I mean, you kind of get a drift for what the genre is about, but not really, because the Supremes and that specific song by the Ronettes, they don't really exactly encompass that specific genre of music to its full potential, or what it was really. And you know, next week we'll kind of talk about exactly what the girl group pop genre was all about, because there's a specific definition for it. And the reason why it's so like it wasn't like anything else at that time. And I'll talk more about the differences between different girl group pop genres a little bit later on, maybe next week. But anyways, this is a really, really good example, this specific genre of music. And it's really, really interesting because it's a little predictable. I mean, there's not much happening, but then it kind of throws you for a loop and there's some extra sections in there. They're like, whoa, I wasn't expecting this song to go there. I mean, it does get a little repetitive as far as music is concerned, but there's a lot of interesting stuff happening here. It's a really, really good song within this specific genre of music. And the interesting thing about it is that lyrically, there's such a big plot in the song's lyrics. I mean, it's not just a simple like song about girl falls in love with a guy or the girl breaks up. I mean, there's so many, you know, different little things happening, because this song kind of follows a story, a very specific story that you kind of hear when you first hear it. You kind of hear the story of the song, but then you're wondering exactly like, what is this song about? And it kind of spells it out for you in the beginning, but the plot for the lyrical plot for the song kind of unravels itself once you kind of listen to more of it. But it's a really, really good song with a lot of lyrical and vocal interplay happening. It's really, really cool. And I can't wait for it to break it down for you guys. It's really, really great. Okay, so this song was released in March of 1963. It's by a girl group from the 60s called the Shirelles. The name of the song is called Foolish Little Girl.
You broke his heart and made him cry, and he's been blue since then. Now he's found somebody new, and you want him back again.
Foolish little girl, fickle little girl, you didn't want him when he wanted you.
Wow, that's really cool. That's an amazing song, actually. It's really, really interesting. It's kind of one of those songs that it's not really kind of like an upbeat song that's really, really catchy and just really kind of gets you on the floor moving and grooving. It's also not a song that is a ballad. I mean, it definitely, it doesn't feel like a ballad, doesn't feel like a moving and grooving sort of shaking like dance song. It's definitely not one of those. It's definitely kind of a midway between both those things. It's actually kind of a mid-tempo song. But anyways, we're going to talk about what makes this song so cool, both musically and lyrically. But first, let's get to the song's music. Okay, so what makes this song so interesting musically? I mean, there's a lot of different things. But the first thing that really catches your eye when you first listen to this song is what is happening in the introduction for this song, because there definitely is an intro. And it's something that I kind of talked about when I did that Lenny Welch song, Since I Fell For You, but it's bear mentioning again because, you know, just a quick little reminder, if you don't remember that episode, you know, a lot of songs from the Tin Pan Alley days of songwriting in the 30s and 40s, you know, which was a building in New York City back at that time. A lot of the songwriters that wrote songs for singers like Ella Fitzgerald and, you know, Bing Crosby and even some other singers from that time, like Tommy Dorsey, you know, a lot of singers that wrote songs for those acts. Most of the time, they would have a little opening verse. You know, they'd have like a little thing, like a little intro where they would just, and usually the opening verse would be kind of sparse, kind of just not a whole lot of instrumentation happening. And it usually, normally with these songs, the vocal would always come in first, and then you would hear the opening verse, and then you kind of get And that would be the kind of introductory to the song. That would kind of reel you in and kind of try to figure out, you know, that opening verse had to be really, really strong because they need to hook those listeners in. So basically, they would create an opening verse and there would be kind of tension in between each chord because they would kind of ring out and then basically they would, there would be no real tempo exactly nailed down with this specific portion of the song or this specific section of the song. There'd be no tempo. It would just be like some guy strumming like three or four chords and then, you know, basically they would keep it at least three or four lines and the maximum. They wouldn't try to do anything more than that. And then basically they would create that sort of tension with after they play those chords strummed out, no real tempo happening here, just strummed out chords with some very legato melodies going on with those lyrics being sung. And then basically after that they would kind of stop and then something would happen where the song would kick into high gear and then you would hear the song's chorus. And then basically that would be the start of the song. As soon as you hear just a couple seconds of silence and you heard those something happening musically, then that's when you hear the song's hook, and then that's when the song would really, really kick in. But anyways, this format was really, really popular in the 30s and 40s, and sometimes they would just breeze through it. They wouldn't even do anything like that, but the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, by the early 60s, that format was still kind of happening, and you still heard a lot of songs like that, and this is a really, really good example of that. And these writers that wrote the song, you know, were in kind of an atmosphere in New York City where they were kind of hearing the echoes of Tin Pan Alley songwriters that came before them in the 30s and 40s, and now they were kind of working in the new version of Tin Pan Alley, which I will talk about in next week's episode of the podcast, but they were kind of working a new version of that, and they were still kind of getting that sort of sound that sort of old school structure was seeping into the lyrics of their songs, you know, and this is a really, really good example of that. But yeah, so that's really cool. The opening verse, you hear that, and then again, weird song structure happening here because it starts with that opening verse and then gets in the chorus, and then I guess you could say this is a chorus verse chorus song, and then there's another verse. I guess there's two verses, and then it starts with the chorus, and then yeah, the verse, and then the chorus, and the verse, and then after that, you hear a really cool, distinctive instrument being played as a solo, and that instrument is called the organ. Yeah, you hear that organ come in, and then here's the cool part about that organ solo in that song. Sometimes when an organ is played in the song, it's not the most comfortable sounding instrument you can hear in a lot of music. Sometimes it's really harsh and ear piercing, and you're like, ooh, that doesn't sound very good. Well, in this particular song, when you hear the organ player do that solo, it really, really sounds good, actually. It sounds smooth. It doesn't sound very ear piercing at all. It actually sounds really, really good. And that's the cool part about, you know, sort of organ players is that it can either be really, really smooth or not so smooth and kind of ear piercing, kind of sharp sounding. And, you know, a lot of organ songs were like that back then. But this song, the organ was really, really smooth. It's kind of sharp in the beginning because the song actually starts out with organ once the chorus kicks in, after the guitar is being played. But other interesting things happening with the song arrangement wise are the guitar parts, because the guitar parts are doing something really, really cool. They're actually kind of mimicking the drums. They're playing the chee-chee. That's actually they're actually imitating the drummer playing the backbeats on the snare. And that's actually really, really cool that they're doing that. So they're playing the guitar players are playing the backbeats on the snare. And then once you're going to get to the verses, the guitar players are actually doing something even cooler. They're actually doing staccato, arpeggios, you know, to kind of go along with the chords of the song. That's actually really cool. And you hear those staccato, arpeggios being played in the verses. It's like, holy shit. That's actually really cool, and that's a little different, you know, than what you're used to hearing. And also, another cool part about this song is the way the drums are being played, because, you know, after you hear the organ solo and before the final chorus, you hear the drums, you hear everything stop, and then you hear that drum fill come in. You're like, wow, that's a cool drum fill. I never would have expected that. It almost sounds like a Motown drum fill, and it's in this song. Very much probably had influences was very much influenced by Motown, and you can kind of hear that, especially with this track. But you got that Motown style drum fill. And the other interesting thing about the song, keep in mind, is that With the drums, you'll notice that you can't really hear the cymbals that well. And the reason why that, is because a lot of 60s pop records that, you know, weren't really Motown records, but more songs produced in New York, L.A. A lot of times what the arrangers did is that they would have the drummer do the kick and snare, but then the other sort of instruments that would later, that would usually be played by the hi-hat or the ride, the sort of thing that would keep the beat, they wouldn't have the drummers play the hi-hat cymbal or the ride cymbal. A lot of times they would have a percussionist play those instruments. So you would hear percussionists oftentimes play a bell or a triangle or a guro or something to sort of, emulate the sound of the bell or the ride cymbal or the hi-hat. So you would oftentimes hear the percussionists in the song play those instruments. And the reason why this being is because the percussionist, oftentimes that specific sound of the bell or the guro or, you know, one of those percussion instruments that would make the sort of sharp sort of sound would cut through better than a ride or a hi-hat. So that's what they a lot of times used back then, is that they would have a percussionist play that instrument in substitution for the hi-hat or the ride on a drum kit. Obviously, when these songs are played live in concert, they would not do that. They would play the full drum kit. But in songs like this, most of the times, the drummers rarely use their cymbals. They mainly just use the kick and the snare. And that's something kind of interesting. A lot of times, they would have like hand claps or, you know, or finger snaps or something like that. Something that kind of, you know, cover up those extra spaces where that would usually be filled by the hi-hat or the ride. And that you hear a lot of that in a lot of New York records and LA records too, but this is a really good example of that. And you can hear that bell and that triangle cymbal come in really, really clean and very much, and it's very upfront once you kind of get to the song's last chorus, you know, and that's when you hear it really, really come in. That's kind of an interesting thing to notice, and that's not just coming from me. I have a friend of mine, you know, who I've talked to on my podcast, Andy Paley. He's told me that specifically. So there's some kind of interesting insight right there for you about, 60s pop records that are produced in New York or LA. So you hear that, and that's really cool. And then as far as the song's chord progression is concerned, a lot of interesting things are happening. I mean, it starts out kind of cliche because obviously it's the 1-6-2-5 in the intro. But then after that is when it gets interesting, because you'd expect it to go something kind of cliche again. But instead of starting on the one chord, a lot of songs start on the one chord. Most of them do. Instead, it starts on the minor three chord. And that's actually kind of cool. Like, whoa, the song starts on the minor three chord. Wow, that's interesting. And it doesn't start in the one chord, but I mean, you kind of get away with it because the minor three chord and the one chord are almost exact same chord. They're pretty much the same chord minus. There's a one note difference between the two. But yeah, so that's really cool. So you hear the minor three chord in place of the one chord, and then you hear 3-6-2-5, and that's kind of cool, you know. And that's the main, in the chorus of the song, that's the main section of the song, is that 3-6-2-5. I mean, that's the main thing you hear. But then the verses, that's when it gets interesting, because all of a sudden you're kind of on a different planet for the verses, because one new chord that is introduced that kind of segues into the song into a different key is the minor five chord in B flat. And basically what's happening here is that you hear the minor five chord in B flat, and it kind of sounds like you're going to a different key, and that's exactly what happens, because you hear the F minor, and then you hear the F minor to B flat, and then you hear the G minor to C minor, and like, you're in a different key now. The F minor kind of took us somewhere else, and that's exactly where it goes. It actually goes from B flat to E flat, so it modulates up a major fourth, and that's actually kind of cool, because it goes from B flat major to E flat major, and that's actually kind of interesting. And then after this, it modulates up a major fifth, because then you hear basically you hear E flat, and then basically you're in E key of E flat, and then you hear something else. You hear the C major into F major, and like, wait a minute, what's happening here? Are we in E flat still, or are we in B, or going back to B flat? Well, it kind of sounds like you're going kind of back to B flat, because the C to F thing, I mean, that's a major 2-5 in B flat. So you're like, okay, sounds like you're going back into B flat. And then all of a sudden you hear the A minor, D minor, like, whoa, you're not in B flat anymore. You're in F major now. Yeah, that's right. We just went from modulated up a major fourth. Now we're going up a major fifth from B flat, and you're actually in F major. And like, holy crap, what is going on here? And then you're like, whoa, you just went up three keys in one verse. How the fuck did that happen? That was really wild. Whoa, that was crazy. And that's something kind of interesting musically, because how many songs can you think of that go up through two keys in one freaking verse? That's unfreaking believable. Holy crap. That's just absolutely insane. How does that happen? I mean, like, you go through two keys in one freaking verse. Actually, three keys, but I mean, actually, no, two keys. But that's just insane. Like, you go from E flat major to F major in one key. You don't just go from E flat major chord to F major chord. You go through the keys in one freaking verse, because you hear that A minor, D minor, and it's a minor three, minor six chord progression in F major, and you're like, whoa, because that's actually kind of cool, because that minor six in F major provides a little segue, because it kind of sounds like you're going from that, from the E flat to the F, which is actually kind of a minor three, going from the four to five back into B flat major into the chorus again. That is absolutely mind-blowing. You're like, what the hell? That is so freaking cool. I mean, that's how tasty a lot of these songs were back then. I mean, not everything was just four chords. Some of these songs were really, really intricate and very interesting with the chord progressions. I mean, some of these songs were not as simple as you might think a lot of them were. I mean, some of them were, but a lot of times they threw in a lot of extra weird shit that you just would not expect from pop music from that time. But that's really, really cool that they did that. I mean, depending on who wrote the songs, because sometimes, you know, some writers preferred more simple chord progression. Sometimes, like, some other writers like to fuck shit up and do some really interesting sort of, you know, theoretical things, like the writer for this song, the music that, you know, she wrote for this song. But that's really, really cool. I love that a lot. And also, another interesting thing happening about the song is that notice how there's different lead vocals going on with this song. It's not just one lead vocal the entire time. It is in the verses, right? You just hear the lead vocals, right? And you just hear the lead vocals in the choruses. In the choruses, you just hear lead vocals, and then you hear the backup vocals. But then once you get to the verses, that's when you hear someone else singing. And then you're like, whoa, what is that? They just switch singers. Like, oh my God, that's crazy. And then you hear the backup singers come in, and then you hear this whole call and response thing happening lyrically. And then you, like, it's just crazy, because you hear the call and response thing, and then you just, it's almost like they're having a conversation with each other lyrically. And then you hear the different, you know, singers come in singing these parts. I mean, there's a different lead singer for the intro than there is in the chorus. I mean, and then the verse is a different lead singer than the chorus is. I mean, it's just this song is just unbelievable. I mean, there's so many things happening in the song musically that just make it really, really cool. I mean, it's just absolutely insane how much there is going on lyrically and musically. And I'm going to get into the really sort of deep, sort of dramatic sort of stage play happening with these songs lyrically in just a second. But I mean, again, I love this song because it's in my favorite key, B flat major. And of course, you guys should know by then, that's my favorite musical key ever. I love it so much. It's really, really cool. Last song I did was in B flat, and it was a little slightly different. But also, again, like the last song I did, another thing you heard was, you know, that 2-4 thing going on where the chords only last for half a bar. Well, that's also in this song too. And that's actually really cool. I mean, it takes a break from that once you kind of get into the last part of the verse before the chorus repeats again. But that's also really cool that they did that. And also, you know, when he gets to that last part before the chorus, you hear the sort of thing stop, and then you hear the vocals take over, and then you hear the chords only the guitar, the band only playing one chord, and then you hear another chord played again, the E flat and the F. They both stop midway, and you hear the vocals take over. That's actually really cool too. I like that part of the song, and when everything stops after the organ solo before the last chorus, and that's really cool. And then you kind of get to the, and then you kind of the song kind of repeats again. But also, one more thing I want to point out before I get to the song's music. One thing I kind of forgot to mention to you guys is that I have been talking to a music producer who's producing very current sounding music today. And he kind of told me that a lot of people are nowadays writing songs that are shorter. They're not the 3-minute songs anymore. A lot of them are very, very short. Some of them are going back to the exact kind of, length that a lot of songwriters were writing songs back in the 60s. They're going back to the 2-minute, 30-second, 2-minute, 20-second, 2-minute, 10-second songs. They're not writing the 3-minute, 55, 45-minute songs like they were in the early part of the 2010s. They're going back to the times in which, you know, songwriters wrote songs that are 2 minutes and 30 seconds, 2 minutes and 45 seconds. They're going back to that, except with more modern sounding music, you know, with hip hop and rap and more modern production values. But it's kind of interesting how they're kind of going back to the short songs, even though nowadays we don't really have to do that. We can write songs as long as they want because we're not restricted to the 45 RPM and, you know, AM radio. We don't have those restrictions anymore. We can write songs as long as we want them to be. But it's kind of interesting how we're kind of going back to the 60s in that regards. And this song is very short in the 2-minute and, you know, 20-second kind of realm. And I'm not going to explain to you exactly why it was that short because I've done that before millions of times on podcasts. You can go back and listen to episodes and talk about exactly why songs are so short by that. But it's kind of interesting that we're kind of getting back to that and kind of getting back to the length of how long songs were back in the 60s. We're doing that exact same thing right now with more modern music. And other earlier episodes to talk about why songs were so short back then and why songwriters had to write songs that were under 3 minutes. But anyways, let's get into the song's lyrics. Okay, so I might as well talk about the dictionary definition of this very specific genre of music, because it kind of ties into what the song is about lyrically. But what makes a girl group song a girl group song? Well, the point of it being is that pretty much most of these songs from the 60s, if they were sung by a girl group, 9 times out of 10, they were not sung from a man's perspective. What I mean by that is that pretty much every single song from the 60s that was sung by a girl group, at least the big hit ones, except for maybe the songs by the Supremes and some of the solo singers at that time. But this is kind of a different thing because we're not talking about female solo singers. We're talking about girl groups, like girls with multiple female singers in one group and not just one female singer like a solo artist. I mean, there was the girl group version of that, but we're talking about a group of female singers, and 9 times out of 10, when you're dealing with songs within this genre, they're all sung from a girl's point of view. And, you know, this was kind of before it was cool to be like lesbian. So most of the time, these songs are written from the heterosexual girl's point of view. So a lot of these women were acting like straight, even if they weren't. I mean, they were basically singing songs about boys. I mean, there's just no way of describing it other than the fact that these songs were told from a woman's perspective, and they were always talking about men. So they often use he in a lot of their songs because they were referring to a guy, and a lot of times, you know, when this happened, boy bands, or should I say boy groups, you know, vocal doo-wop groups, or more or less even boy bands like, you know, the British Invasion groups, a lot of times they would, you know, when they would cover these songs, they would change the perspective. Or, you know, make it so that way it's sung from a guy's perspective versus a girl's perspective. And, you know, or they just wouldn't record the songs at all. Yeah, that's right. A lot of these songs never got recorded by guys because they were sung from a woman's perspective. And if they recorded them, they would have came across as gay, you know. So, I mean, you know, that's exactly what happened at that time. You know, so a lot of these songs you heard from the 60s, I mean, if they were told from a woman's perspective, it would basically make it impossible for guys to sing them unless they kind of switched things around and made it about girls versus guys, you know. And it's kind of interesting that, you know, basically that's how that went down. And this is a really, really good example of that. Okay, so, you know, the interesting thing about this song is that I'm going to... I'm not sure exactly. I mean, I could probably look this up, but just for the sake of that, there are women that listen to this podcast. I'm going to try to turn on my, you know, talk about you guys for a second, because I know this. A lot of these songs are kind of, you know, geared towards their unisex songs, or, you know, songs being sung by men, because I've done quite a few of those. But this time I'm going to, you know, shine a light on you guys, the girls that are listening to this podcast, because even if you're a woman listening to this podcast, I think you might enjoy a lot of these songs because they're about things that girls can still experience today. And let me just put it to you this way. This song, there's such a big sort of plot happening around here. But let me kind of break it down for you. Let me just say this. If you're a girl, right, and you're like, let's just say, like, you know, you meet this guy in Tinder or Bumble, and, you know, and you're like, wow, damn, he's hot. Like, I really, really, really want to, you know, like, date him and maybe have sex with him. And, you know, and of course, you know, and you're kind of like that. And let's say, like, you have a friend that's like, girl, you should date that guy because, you know, he's, like, really, really attractive. And I think he'd be, like, a really, really good mate for you. So please just, like, smash him. I would really appreciate that. You know, so if you're a girl like that and, you know, and you've, like, and you've decided, you know what, you know, I think I'm probably going to say no. And, you know, I even though he is kind of pushing my buttons and he's kind of, you know, I do kind of like him a lot. I think I might just say no to him because, you know, I just don't really at this moment I'm not too interested in him. And if you're like that and your friend's like, girl, you know, you shouldn't say no to him because if you say no, he's going to find the girl and then he's going to hook up with her and then you're never going to have sex with him. Well, you know, You don't listen to, let's just say you don't really listen to her and you kind of just, you know, go on your own accord and you decide to reject him anyways. And let's just say he gets a little upset by it. He gets a little hurt by it. Maybe he doesn't text you back or, like, you know, maybe he doesn't answer you back your DMs or anything like that. And he just kind of just doesn't really, you know, talk to you at all. And you're like, ooh, I don't know what happened. I don't know. He gets really upset with you. Maybe he says something not very nice to you and just, like, he just kind of walks away from you. And of course, you don't feel bad about it, you know, because it's like, well, you said no. I'm like, I can find some other guys. I got, like, dicks on dial. Are you kidding me? Well, anyways, if you're like that, and all of a sudden, a couple years later, you're scrolling on his Instagram and you see pictures of him getting married to another girl, and you see her with a wedding ring on, and you're like, wow, what happened? he's dating another girl now, and I kind of want him now. Like, what happened? Like, I shouldn't have done that. Oh man. Like, I want to sleep with him so bad now, but you know, he's got a girl now, you know, and I can't do anything cause he's taken. And then you go, but you turn to your girlfriend and then she's like, girl, I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. I mean, you should have like dated him or you should have snagged that guy, girl. Cause he's dating another girl now, so you can't do anything about it. I'm sorry, but, you know, like, you should have taken my advice. Well, if that has happened to you, then I guarantee you this song is exactly for you, because that is exactly the plot and scenario that is happening with the song. You know, I mean, basically, and it's kind of interesting because there's two people in this song. There's the girl that broke the guy's heart and is like, man, I really want to smash him now. I still like him. And then you've got the girl. It's like, girl, you know, it's too late, you know, because, you know, it's like basically, you know, you made a mistake. You fucked up. And now, you know, he's got another girl and he's happy. He's doing great and he can't do anything about it. You know, and that's exactly what's happening in this song. I mean, it's such a very deep sort of scenario happening because there's so many things going on. It's almost like a melodrama. It's almost kind of like a plot from This Is Us or something like that. But it's exact kind of a thing that's happening in the song, and it literally could have happened in 2020, even though the song from 1963, you know. So I mean, like, you know, again, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, sometimes, you know, women can kind of regret their decisions about how they feel about certain guys. But, you know, sometimes the guys find someone else and now they're happy. And then they're like, ooh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. You know, especially if he was hot. You know, what if he was a hunk, you know? But anyways, I mean, that's kind of what's happening in the song lyrically. And it's very, very relatable because, I mean, like, I was literally scrolling on comments through YouTube and people commenting about the song, and they're saying, like, this happened to me. And like, these comments were like 2 or 3 years ago, and this is exactly what happened to me. And I'm assuming these were young girls, because they didn't seem like they were in their 70s and they were 60s. I mean, these women seem very, very young, you know, and that's kind of interesting that this song kind of talks about a plot or very detailed that could still very much happen today, because this shit still happens. I mean, you know, it's like it just kind of takes a modern form of it. I mean, there was no Instagram back then, so, you know, the only way people found out about these things is if they called them up, or, you know, or they wrote them a letter. I mean, that's how old school the song is. But this very exact thing could still happen today. So girls that, you know, around my age and maybe even a little bit older too, but still, I mean, you know, this, and the interesting thing about it is that you got one singer playing the girl who, you know, who loves the guy and still wants him, and then you got the other singers like, girl, it's too late, you can't do that now. He's got a new girlfriend and he's happy, and you know, you can't mess with that. And so basically, you got those two things happening, you know, and there's a lyrical interplay happening between those two people singing those two songs, and that's actually really, really cool. And I think there's one singer who sings the opening verse of the song and doesn't sing anything else for the rest of the song. She just do backup vocals, and then you have the main singer singing the main part of the song, you know, playing the girl at saying, hey, you shouldn't have done that, you know. And I think this in the song, she kind of plays a motherly figure. I'm not really quite sure if that's true, but it kind of sounds like it. But then you got the girl who's like, oh, I still love him though. Are you sure? Is sure he's single? Maybe they're just like, maybe it's only temporary. Maybe they're like in an open relationship. Maybe I can still smash him. I mean, basically, I mean, that's kind of what the song is about lyrically. And I think it's, you know, if you're someone around my age, I definitely know you'll be able to relate to this song, even if you're, you know, someone that is not a baby boomer, but a millennial. I think this song will very much relate to you. And again, like, I wouldn't be able to sing the song because I'm a dude, you know, because it's definitely sung from a woman's perspective about a girl talking about a guy. I mean, I would have to sort of, you know, change up a lot of the lyrics to make it so that way I can sing it, since I'm a guy who likes girls. But again, that's what a lot of these girl group songs are. You know, they are sung from a woman's perspective. And that's really cool. And next week I'll get into more history behind girl groups, and I'll get into the more history behind where a lot of these songs were written, and talk a little bit more about the genre next week. So that concludes part one of episode number 123 and the first new episode of the brand new year of 2021 of my 60 Music Podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you like my analysis on this week's song, you thought it was cool, you thought it was interesting, you never heard this song before, and you're a millennial, you never even heard this very specific genre of music from the 60s, you thought, wow, this is really, really interesting. I definitely want to check out more of this music, or at least more, or learn more about the people that created this specific genre of music, and learn more about the musicians and songwriters that helped bring it to life, and some of the recording studios where they record a lot of this stuff at. If you're a millennial and you're just getting to now know this stuff, you never heard it before, except for when you heard it through this podcast through me, please email me at samltwilliamicloud.com. You can also reach out to me on Instagram, iHeartOldies, and check out more of my old original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. And again, my new upcoming single is coming out on January 8th. It's going to be out on all the streaming platforms. Turquoise Apricot, the A side, She Said No on the B side, and again, it's going to come out under my new stage name, Sam L. Williams. Super excited for that. I can't wait for you guys to hear that. It's going to be so good. I think you guys are really going to like those two songs a lot. I'm very proud of them. I love them so much. I think you guys are going to like them too. The pre-save link to those two songs, the Spotify pre-save link at least, is going to be in the description of this episode of this podcast, and it's also going to be in the last couple of descriptions of the last couple of episodes it did, you know, when I announced it, last half of 2020. But yeah, so in the meantime, you can check out all my old original music, which is on my website, salemmusic.net, and you can also check out the official Spotify and YouTube playlist for this podcast, so you'll be able to hear all the songs I've talked about on my show so far, including some of the ones I've mentioned in interview episodes. And if listening to those playlists gives you any kind of ideas for the kind of music I should talk about next on my podcast that I haven't yet, please email those ideas to me at samltwilliaicloud.com, or you can also reach out to me on Instagram, iHeartOldies, and let me know if you have any ideas for any kind of music I should talk about next on my podcast that I haven't yet, please do that. After listening to those playlists, of course, because that will give you an idea for the kind of stuff I talk about on my show. Also, you can check out the official Redbubble merch store for this podcast. And by the way, I don't know if you guys knew this, but I do have a secondary store for, I do have another logo other than my official podcast merch. A long time ago, I created a logo specifically for my artist's merch and for my original music. It's not the same as my, Keep Things Groovy Millennial Throwback Machine logo for that merch. It's a little different, but I figured I'd tell you guys about this now since I'm kind of reintroducing my original music to you guys. If you guys haven't heard it yet, or just for in general for people who don't really know that side to myself. But anyways, this artist merch, it's my name, Sam Williams, but then there's a big L, right next to both my first name and last name. And it kind of goes along with my new stage name, Sam L. Williams. And another cool part about it is that you have the L, right? And then you have my first name and last name on the side of the L and then at the bottom of the L. But then you also have a heart and a peace sign. And that's actually really cool. So, and the heart kind of represents what a lot of my songs are about, which is romantic relationships. And the peace sign gives it that nice sort of 60s aesthetic, even though it's really late 60s. I mean, people weren't wearing necklaces with peace signs on them in the early 60s. But again, that's late 60s. But again, it kind of gives it that nice 60s aesthetic. Well, if you want to check out that merch store, that link is in my website, which is also, in the description of each episode of my podcast. So there you'll be able to find my artist merch, which is going to have a slightly different logo than my podcast merch. But if you want to check out my podcast merch, again, that's also on my website, but it's also in the description of this episode of this podcast, like it is with every episode of my podcast. And again, that's the catchphrase I say at the end of every episode, and keep on trucking tie-dye font with the name and podcast in the bottom. And my artist merch also has the exact same font, too, so there is some brand consistency there, which is really cool. I'm glad I have that. But yeah, so, you can check out all of that, and again, the new single's coming out on January 8th. It's a 2-song single. Again, it's to replicate a 45 RPM single, just like they did in the 60s. Turquoise Apricot on the A side, She Said No on the B side, and it's also going to be under my new stage name, Sam L. Williams, and that's how it's going to appear on all the streaming platforms where you guys listen to music. So that's going to be really cool. So I can't wait for you guys to hear that. Again, that's January 8th, this Friday. I'm super excited. And yeah, so by the way, when you guys hear those two songs, let me know what you think of them too. I love to hear your thoughts on them. If you think that the songs sound cool, if you think the production quality is good, the arrangements are really cool. I'd love to hear what you guys think of those two songs. They're very, very different. In fact, they're complete polar opposites. I mean, those two songs couldn't be any more different from each other. But I'm happy that they're both getting released on Friday, and I'm really, really excited for you guys to hear them. So definitely let me know what you think of those two songs. And you can do that by emailing me at samltwilliaicloud.com, or you can also hit me up on Instagram at iHeartOldies. But anyway, so I'm Sam Williams, and thank you guys for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Happy New Year. Can't wait to see what the rest of 2021 looks like. And until next week, please keep things groovy.